Chuck, I'm an addict. That's going to be hard to follow. Anyway, I'll get these disclaimers out of the way. I got this horrible fear of public speaking. I don't like doing this. I was asked to be a service, so that's why I'm here. I'd like to thank God, Dean, the committee, for asking me to come out and share my experience on Tradition 8. And to be honest with you, I had to do some research because when they first told me Tradition 8, I'm like, what the hell is Tradition 8? I had to look it up. So, and that's, I'm a little embarrassed about that because my meeting's a stepping tradition meeting, my home group. So I feel like I put the pressure on myself, like I should know all this about the traditions and the steps, because every other week we read out of It Works How and Why, the tradition, and then we discuss it in our home group. So, but I had to look it up. So I'm going to get honest about that. But, and so first and foremost, about this tradition, I'm going to read the tradition since we don't read them, in case anybody else doesn't know what it is too. I can't remember. Tradition 8, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So I get this out of the way, and you'll figure this out. I'm not a professional speaker. I'm not a professional member of NA, and we don't have professionals in NA. What we do is we share our experience, one addict helping another, the therapeutic value, and that's how this thing works. And when I first came around here, when I heard that, I thought, there's no way that can work. How are you all sick people going to help me, you know, by sharing your experience? There's got to be some kind of secret thing going on here. There's got to be some kind of trick to this or something, you know. And then as I kept coming back, y'all told me to keep coming back, I started to hear you guys sharing your stories, and I started to hear the similarities, and I started to relate to the feelings, and I became attracted to that, because I had been going to treatment, outpatient treatment, and there was these counselors giving me this information, but deep down inside I'm thinking, they can't relate to me, they haven't walked in my shoes, so how can they help me? But they did give me a lot of good information, and they pointed me in the direction of NA, which I'm glad I took that suggestion, and I showed up to an NA meeting, and I kept coming back. So, so I did some reading. I did some research in their literature, and I'm going to put my glasses on so I can read my writing. I took some notes, so I won't go blank. I had this, James was talking about fears, you know, my fear of public speaking kind of kicked in recently, thinking about this meeting. I was asked to do an 11th tradition meeting a couple months ago, and I spoke for like 4 minutes and then went blank. And that was pretty scary, you know. And then I caught myself starting to ad-lib and starting to BS, you know, just to try to fill time. And then I got humble and I stopped sharing. Because I was taught when you go blank, most of the time it's time to shut up. You know, just get humble, let somebody else share. You know, so, but that's one of my fears. So I took some notes, I did some research so I can kind of stay on topic and share what I learned and what I know about Tradition 8, maybe help somebody. And I know it's going to help me, because whenever I write something down, like with step work, it kind of sticks with me a little bit more. Now that I'm a senior, I got CRS and things come and go, and it don't stick in my brain anymore like it used to. So, to get to what I learned here, we don't have any staff psychiatrists, no doctors, lawyers, or counselors. Like I said earlier, it's just one addict helping another. We share our experience, and when that happens, something magical happens in here, you know. And what I've learned is that there's a power in here. There's a power in here, and that power is carried by the group. You know, the group carries that power and shares that. And when I came here, I was broken spiritually. I didn't know that. I knew I hated myself. I knew that I was done again. I knew I didn't want to put my family through what I was putting them through, but I didn't want to stop using either, you know. And when I started coming to meetings, I could feel that power in here. It was hard to relate. It was hard to focus. It was hard to listen. But I could feel what you guys were sharing, and I could feel that power. And I became attracted to that. So when I was researching this, whenever we do traditions in my home group, I get amazed at how wise the predecessors were, you know, when they set up the traditions. you know, how they set them up. Because in my mind, like, especially when I first came here and even today, like, I got all these brilliant ideas on how to reinvent the wheel. Like, we could make this Chuck's Anonymous, and I could improve this thing and make it better. You know, and in the beginning, why you do this? Why can't you do it like this? Or this will be the best way to do it. And I didn't have a clue. The predecessors had the wisdom. They had the wisdom that was revealed to them, my understanding, from God. And it was revealed to them how to set this thing up and get these guidelines so that we could do this and accomplish this and help carry the message to help the still suffering addict. And that's pretty cool stuff. So let's see, what else did I learn? Okay, I like my home group. We do, like I said, we read out of it, Works Out Wine. At the end of the tradition, it has a section on spiritual principles. And it breaks down the spiritual principles in that tradition and talks about how it relates to that tradition. So I wrote some of those down so I could share my experience on that. And one of them is humility in this tradition. And I don't know about you guys, but when I first came around, I thought humility was just like bowing and saying, yes, sir, I thought that was humility. But I learned here that that's not what humility is, and, you know, it's totally different. I like, there's a definition in here of humility, and I don't have to read it because I know what it talks about. Being humble is knowing, being honest with myself about my assets and my liabilities. That's what humility is, you know, and how humility relates to this tradition is we need to know when to ask for help for special workers, you know. And like for me, I don't know about anybody else, the hardest thing for me to do even today with a lot of experience in this program is ask for help, you know, because I think that I can take care of whatever I got to take care of. And now where I'm at in my process and recovery, like I'm older, a little bit wiser, got some experience, and my own worst enemy, me, I know something now. I don't need to ask for help. I can take care of this. But I have to be reminded that I don't know it all. You know, I have to remain open-minded, and I have to ask for help when I need to. And I still struggle with that. So that's an important principle in this tradition. So prudence is a spiritual principle that's involved in this tradition. And I remember the first meeting I went to, right, I hooked up with this gentleman who's my sponsor today, and he gave me some suggestions, and he told me to listen to the readings. So I'm listening to the readings, and I had all these misperceptions about what the meeting was going to be like, what y'all were going to be like. And they read the readings, and I heard anonymity and autonomy. When I heard those two words, I was like, damn, I don't even know what that means. There's some intelligent life in here, and I had to go to my dictionary and look it up. You know, so the same thing happened when I heard, you know, when we read, when we read this tradition, it lists the principles, and one of them was prudence. I'm like, damn, I don't know what, I think I know what words mean, but I don't always know what they mean. So I had to look that up. And in this tradition, I mean, this principle, the prudence, how it's applied in here is, we shouldn't hire workers to do work that we can do for ourselves. So we're supposed to, according to this tradition, we're supposed to come together and discuss this and make a decision based on what we need and if we need help or not and how to go about that. You know, and for me, and prudence, what it means to me is making good decisions. You know, and what I learned when I got here, I didn't make good decisions. All my decisions were based on fear. They were based on self-centeredness. They were based on what's in it for me, you know. And the disease is so powerful. Like, I was in such denial that I showed up for my family physically. I was there a lot for my family. But I was just there so I could go do what I wanted to do when it was time for me to do what I wanted to do. You know, it was always a string. There was always strings attached. You know, so my decision-making was, even when I thought I was making good decisions, it was fear-based, it was disease-based, it was self-centered-based. So the program, the steps, and the traditions have helped me to make better decisions. You know, and that's what this principle in this tradition teaches me. And then a cool thing that I've learned about the traditions, anonymity is woven through all the traditions. You know, it's woven through all the traditions. And the anonymity in this tradition, all of us are equally qualified to to share a recovery experience and to help somebody. We're all equally qualified. We're not professionals. So like my story might help you, and James's story might help you, you know, and that's how this thing works, you know. And then how it's worked for me also is I was taught to be open-minded and to listen. And I thought I was a good listener, but I wasn't. And I still have to work at listening today. I mean, I can meet you and you tell me your name, and because I'm thinking of 10 different things, I don't forgot your name. Between that and CRS, I don't forgot your name. I can't remember your name, you know. So I have to practice listening. And like a real good way to do that is in the meeting, listen to the readings. You know, most of the time when the readings are going on, I'm drifting. I'm thinking about what I'm going to do after the meeting, what I'm going to do this weekend, what's going on, whatever. I'm all over the place. And I really have to focus to listen and practice that skill. It's a skill that I've that I still need improvement on, and I need to practice it. And I've gotten a little bit better at it because of what we do, you know. So that's pretty cool. And then it talks about integrity. That's a principle in this tradition. And the way that we apply integrity in this tradition is that we apply the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. You know, that's how we are applying that integrity, by helping each other, you know, by carrying the message. And as far as my experience carrying the message, like I've gone through phases where, like, I feel like I'm wasting my time, you know. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever felt that. Like, you know, this person's not listening to me, or they're not paying attention to what I'm sharing. So I can spend my time better somewhere else. Yeah. And now that I'm getting older, time is a precious gift to me. And sometimes I struggle with that. But what I've learned is it ain't up to me to decide who's going to hear the message. It's just up to me to carry the message, and then third step, let it go. Just let it go and let God take it from there. And, you know, I don't know, I fall short on that, but I've gotten better at that too because of this program. You know, I've learned that in this program. So that's pretty cool. And thank God that people did that for me when I came around, because if they could have read my mind, I wasn't paying attention. I didn't want to hear what they had to say. You can take whatever you want with your message. You guys need to hear that message and, you know, all that stuff. But just teach me how to stop using cocaine and not getting into trouble situations, feeling the way I've been feeling, I'll be okay. I don't need all this other message stuff y'all are talking about. But thank God they carried the message to me, you know, and it sunk into my thick skull eventually. And that was pretty cool. So let's see. Okay. Okay, in one of our pieces of literature, it talks about we are non-professional, not unprofessional. And I thought that was interesting, because I never thought about that. And what's in the literature is that, and the literature, I don't know about you guys, but literature is very important to me in my recovery. Like when I first came around, I didn't believe none of y'all, so I started reading the literature. And then I started to believe that. And then I got on the literature committee and I found out you all wrote the literature. I was like, damn, you all don't feed me. You all don't feed me into that, because the literature is written by. But then I got attracted to that after I found that out. I was like, damn, man, this is pretty cool. This is not some doctor sitting somewhere in his house writing up what addicts are supposed to do or how they're supposed to feel and all. This is our collective experience in all of our literature. That's pretty powerful stuff. So, the difference between, it touched on the difference between being non-professional and unprofessional. So, you know, non-professional just means that we're here, we're sharing of ourselves, we're not getting paid for this. You know, if I was getting paid for this, I'd be starving, because I'm not a professional speaker, you know, and it's not my thing. So, thank God we don't have to do that. And, you know, also, if it was a room full of professionals, I probably wouldn't have stayed. You know, I wouldn't have stayed because I wouldn't have felt that therapeutic value. So it touched on unprofessional. That doesn't give us the okay to be unprofessional in our service commitments and in our home groups and in our groups. We need to be professional. And when we go out into the world, we need to do things in a professional manner. It doesn't give us the right to be sloppy. And you know, I thought that was pretty interesting, and reminded me, you know, how to carry myself. So It also touched on, and I didn't realize this, so I'm still learning. It said that in the tradition that we are forever non-professional, you know, and it touched on, that's kind of like a little bit of a contradiction, because we're a Just for Today program. How do you bring the concept of being forever into a Just for Today program? And it touched on the spiritual principle of commitment. You know, we're making a commitment with this tradition, and the predecessors had the wisdom to set this up to maintain this non-professional way that we do things. You know, and that, you know, that was that's good stuff, and I'm glad I learned that. And then, you know, part of the tradition talks about the you know, when we hire special workers. I don't have a whole lot of experience with that. Early in recovery, I was involved in the literature committee, and I had to. We have a service center in Baltimore, and we went to Baltimore and bought our literature for the Bay Area where I'm from, and they have special workers there, and you know, they were paid to do a job. But what I learned in this tradition, and I didn't realize this, our service committees hold these people accountable, the special employees accountable. They have to do, they're working for our committees, just like our service structure. The home group member is at the top of our service structure, and then the area does what we tell them to do, and then the region tells what we tell them to do, and the world does what we tell them to do. We are at the top of our service structure. So these special employees are working for us, in other words. They're working for us in the committee that created or came together and decided to employ these special workers. So that was something that I learned in here, and didn't have a whole lot of experience with other than buying literature from them. So, you know, that's what I learned about the tradition. And, you know, I guess what I was thinking about yesterday was, you know, about this being a spiritual journey, about the topic here at the convention. And I was thinking, I was reflecting back. I came down and I went down the boardwalk and took a little walk, and I was reflecting back on me and my history and doing a little inventory and a little gratitude search. And I was remembering back, and like, I used to come to the ocean. My family and I have been coming to the ocean since I was a little kid. We come down here every year. And I remember coming down here as a young boy and having good times. We come down for a day or something, and then as we got older, we come down for a week. And after I started using, this was a using trip. It was all about using. Came to the ocean, it was all about using. It was getting using, you know, and ripping and running. And I thought about how in the last 20 years my life has been flipped, and it's not about that coming down here. I started coming to this convention probably 17 years ago, and it was pretty cool for the first time to come down here and not be about using, to come down here and be clean. You know, everything was like new and fresh, you know, the ocean, the sand, the beach, the boardwalk. It was a really good experience. And I remember doing the sunrise meeting one morning, and man, that was beautiful, out on the beach with the sun coming up. It was a little chilly out there, but being on the beach in the morning, and I was reflecting this yesterday, that time of the day when I was using, I was just falling asleep, if I was falling asleep, you know, I was just, you know, because I was up all night doing what I was doing. And it's pretty cool how the program has transformed me, you know. And so I'm walking down the boardwalk, right, and they got these benches on the boardwalk, and they got these little placards on them, in memory of so-and-so, in memory of so-and-so. And then I was reflecting back about my dad. He passed away about 7 years ago. And I was remembering all the good times and the good memories coming down the beach and hanging out with the family. And it was pretty cool to remember that and to remember the good times. And, you know, in my spiritual journey, when I started this journey, I was spiritually bankrupt. You know, I was spiritually bankrupt. And I came here and I didn't know that I was spiritually bankrupt, and I didn't know the solution to my problem was a spiritual solution. You know, I just thought if I stopped using cocaine, I'd be okay. And you guys taught me how to fill my spirit, and transform to the person I am today. And I had two young kids when I first got clean, and I couldn't stand the person I'd become, and you know, did a lot of harm and damage. And the program has transformed me into a person who, you know, I'm a good father, I'm a good husband, I'm a good son, I'm a good employee, I'm a good friend. And those were all the things that's all I ever wanted. And I thought that I was sort of kind of like that, but didn't realize how self-centered that I was. And there was no way I could accomplish those things as long as I was caught up in the grip of addiction. And so what I'm working on today, I'm just going to hit on this. I got some time. It deals with the topic of spirituality. I'm learning how to be calm. And this is how powerful God is for me, right? I learned this lesson. If there's any dog people in here, you might want to cover your ears, okay, for a minute. I never was a dog person, right? But we just got a dog. So my wife and daughter wanted a dog. So they rescued this little Shih Tzu, right? And this little sucker, I love this dog, right? Okay, I love this dog now. So we're trying, and he's got these character defects, right? So he's got these character defects, right? He's a beautiful creature, but he's got these character defects. And he was abused. He wasn't taken care of. So I can kind of understand it, but it pisses me off when he don't do what I want him to do. He's in my castle now. Right? At least I think it's my castle. It's becoming his castle. You know, or it's my wife's castle becoming his castle, however you want to look at it. So he's got these character defects. He likes to bite people, and he likes to bite other dogs, right? So I'm doing what I learned here. I'm being open-minded, trying to learn how to teach this dog and trying to train this dog, right? Because my way of training a dog, what I've learned growing up, kick him, smack him, hit him, beat him till he does what you want, and if he doesn't, do it again. And I know that it doesn't work, so I'm trying to be open-minded. So we're learning new techniques and watching this guy who's an expert at training dogs, and I'm working with my dog, right? And he reminds me of me and us when we don't want to surrender, right? Like, we taught him to sit down, and he'll sit. When you got treats, he'll sit right on down. He's good for the treat. When you want him to sit and he don't want to sit, his legs and his arms, his paws, his legs get really stiff. And he said, and I try to push him down, and he stiffens up like this. It just reminds me of, like, an early recovery in my process when I don't want to surrender. You know, I don't want to surrender. And he's taught me that, the secret, the key, what I'm learning, the key to get the dog under control, you got to get him calm. You got to snap the brain out. Like, I get obsessed and locked and loaded on something, my brain has to be snapped out of it. I got to say a prayer. I got to talk to God. Somebody's got to say something to me or something to snap me out of it. The dog's the same way, man. When he's chewing on your leg, he's locked and loaded, and you got to snap his brain out of it. You got to get him calm. So it just came to me, I need to learn. The dog needs to meditate better, and I need to meditate better. So I'm learning to meditate. I'm taking a new level in my spiritual journey to spend some time meditating. So I go to this meditation meeting, right? And they sit there for 15 minutes and listen to this chant. And I'm thinking, I'm going to fall asleep. I'm going to start snoring, or I'm going to pass gas. So I was kind of like my dog. I'm meditating like this. I'm trying, don't fall asleep, start snoring. And don't fart. Come on, please, Chuck. So, but I love this process. I love this journey that I'm on. And thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you.